the EU and me. Brought to you with the support of the Department of Foreign Affairs, Communicating Europe Initiative.
Yes, indeed. In the new series of EU and Me, we're exploring how this country has changed since we voted to join the EU 50 years ago. This month, the focus is on women. How, if at all, has the EU helped shape and changed Irish women's lives over the past half century? In a moment, we'll speak to Dr. Laura Bambrick, Head of Social Policy and Employment Affairs at the Irish Congress of Trade Unions. Orla O'Connor as well, Director of the National Women's Council of Ireland. But first, we're going to hear from Mairéan O'Shea. She's European Movement Ireland, Masters in Politics focused on gender equality in the EU. And I spoke to her and asked her about that 50 years, about what the EU has done for Irish women.
Yeah, well, you're marking the 50th anniversary of Ireland's referendum to join the EU in 1972. And one of the things that my colleagues at European Movement Ireland are doing to mark that anniversary are they're producing a digital timeline of 50 steps that kind of mark or show Ireland's journey from then to now. And one of the very first steps in that journey is the abolition of the marriage bar. And I think that's like a really pivotal moment for women in Ireland. And I'm sure all your listeners know about the marriage bar, but it was a policy that required women to resign their jobs upon marriage. And now that kind of seems a bit crazy, but back then that was what was done. And so when Ireland wanted to join the EEC, as the EU was then called, they had to kind of get up to speed with the gender equality goals that were already there in the EEC. So yeah, I think so that's definitely a big point.
If we look at, I guess, what's happening today with some of the states that are trying to get into the EU that have candidates, and obviously the process with Ukraine as well, in order to get themselves ready, and it could take a number of years, they have to meet certain bars. So is it arguable that the women bar would have, or the marriage bar would have been in place for longer had the impetus not been there, or the, well, call it a stick or call it a carrot, not been there? So, well, you won't be allowed into the club if you aren't at these rules.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, in my colleague's section in our timeline on our website about the marriage bar, he does quote a historian that said that Ireland was a little bit kind of reluctant to make these changes. But, you know, when the EEC was founded itself with the Treaty of Rome in 1957, it was that far back that they had basically in the treaty that men and women should receive equal pay for equal work. So, I mean, you're talking 20 years later when Ireland is realizing, oh, we better get up to speed with something that we consider so basic now. I mean, despite the fact that we still do have a gender pay gap.
Yeah, yeah. So and alongside that, then, I guess, could you say that obviously rights for women were contained different employment rights and changes that have been made over the last 50 years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it started out with bringing women up into a level playing field with men in the labour market. And I mean, among those policies that were brought in the mid-70s at EU level, but then had to be instituted at Irish level, were, you know, protection of pregnant workers while at work, ensuring that you couldn't discriminate against pregnant workers. You know, women having children had to be able to come back to work on the same equally favorable conditions that they left. And as well as that, I guess you have maternity leave. Now, that was, you know, not the minimum standard for maternity leave, wasn't brought in until the 1990s. So, I mean, we're still talking about 20 years later about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look, it's an ongoing job as well, I take it, Mairéan, when it comes to, I suppose, women's rights. The issue isn't over by any stretch of the imagination. I know there's a big concentration the last number of years on stopping violence against women and addressing some of the gender imbalances that are still there.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in recent years, the EU has set some really ambitious goals, you know, like, even within the EU institutions themselves, President Ursula von der Leyen has set a target of 50% gender equality at all levels of commission management, and they have an equal college of commissioners. As well as that, you know, Irish MEP Frances Fitzgerald, she sits on the Women's Rights and Gender Equality Committee in the European Parliament. And they currently have a, well, they're pushing for a directive to get 40% of non-executive members on company boards to be of the underrepresented gender, which is obviously these days usually women. So there's some really big goals. But as you're saying, in the past 50 years, it's kind of moved from focusing on these are the rights in the workplace to looking well beyond that. And I think it's really interesting to think about the Digital Services Act and how when people voted in the referendum, you know, back in the 70s, they weren't thinking about the internet and they weren't thinking about social media. But that is now such a huge part of what the EU does in our day-to-day lives and, you know, protecting women online, combating cyber violence, all this sort of stuff is, you know, so far from where we were 50 years ago, but then really positive changes.
Okay. And learned from that then, you mentioned there, Sabrina Lyon, in terms of the quotas getting up to 50% of management. We've seen that and it's developing at the moment in Irish politics. How much of a driver has European Union been in trying to get more women involved in politics and decision-making or, you know, instilling and saying, look, you're going to have a quota to get to where we think you should be or we want to be in terms of women's participation?
Yeah, I mean, the most recent EU elections, I believe we had about 40% women elected to the European Parliament. Obviously, the EU can't enforce quotas in member states, but sure. I think it's a really promising thing that we have so many women in top positions at European level. You know, Ursula von der Leyen, Roberta Metsola, who's in the Parliament, Christine Lagarde in the European Central Bank. And then obviously we have the, you know, Irish women like European Ombudsman Emily O'Reilly and Eimear Cook in the European Medicines Agency. Like, we have so many great women leading institutions that I just hope that, like, the EU can set an example for member states.
Okay, and that's kind of where do you think that things will be going from that point of view, that all policies that are drawn up, discussions drawn up, will have that factor of, I suppose, equality between men and women?
That's absolutely the goal, yeah. I think, you know, after the financial crash, there was criticism from women's rights groups that, you know, the recovery response didn't take into account how austerity measures affected women more than men sometimes when, you know, there was a reduction of welfare services. When it comes to COVID, I think the EU has really taken into account how women were disproportionately affected by COVID as frontline workers and as well as being primary child carers in most cases. And I think it's really promising that the EU is starting to realise that we need to look at all policies through a gender lens, and it's beneficial to both men and women.
Okay. All right. Well, Miriam, look, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us and go through all that for us on Kerry today.
Thanks, Jerry.
That's Miriam O'Shea from the European Movement of Ireland. If you have a view on what she had to say, get in touch. We'll talk with our guests on EU and Me, a women's role, how it's affected by our membership, after we take these.
The EU and Me, brought to you with the support of the Department of Foreign Affairs, Communicating Europe Initiative.
Yeah, we're talking in relation to EU and Me. We're talking about the women's role and the role of women and the lives of women, how it's been changed over the 50 years of our membership. We have a survey, radiokerry.ie/EU and Me. Check it out. You can input your feelings on it. Has it been beneficial otherwise? What are the main areas it's been beneficial in? Input that, get involved, and we will share that after the show. We've Dr. Laura Bambrick, Head of Social Policy and Employment Affairs at the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, and also Orla O'Connor, Director of the National Women's Council of Ireland. And Laura, if I could start with you. Miriam was talking there about the role and the impact, I suppose, and what the pandemic revealed about the role of women. And perhaps maybe the question is now, is the EU a place where you get policy responses delivered or talked about or developed to kind of address the imbalances that, I suppose, the last 2 years have shown up in our society?
Yeah, morning, Jerry. So It used to be said that farmers were the main beneficiary of Ireland's membership to EU.
Yeah.
But I think over time we can say Irish women, if they haven't overtaken farmers, they're definitely a close second. And to this day, we have continually relied on EU institutions to vindicate our rights, to go back and get what our national parliament are failing to do. And we can see that in legislation that's currently going through our parliament, in things like the flexible working bill that's going to allow parents, both mothers and fathers, and other people with care and responsibility, go to their employer and ask for flexible working arrangements, not just remote working, but things like maybe not working the summer, not working during term times, or working split shifts, sort of the flexible working that we were doing throughout the pandemic. We have other things that Mirren touched on there about gender pay reporting. Again, things that maybe we would have got around to do as a nation, but would have done it much, much slowly. And we rely on the EU to bring out the whip, to set deadlines for our legislature to bring them through. Yeah. So throughout the last 50 years, we have relied on the EU, and we continue today to do that.
Yeah. Orla O'Connor, if I could ask you, what's your view on that central point about, like, the big issue, which was the marriage bar and the impact that had on women's lives, the legacy of it now? It's that question that would we have gotten around to doing it when we did it if we weren't getting our, as I say, ducks in a row and embarking on the road, although it's much more detailed road now in terms of what Moldova will have to do, what the Ukraine further down the line will have to do to get ready for membership of the EU?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear when you look back in the sort of the history of women's rights in Ireland, that very much Ireland joining the EU was a significant point in terms of pushing forward those rights. Because, I mean, if back in, you know, 1973, the Irish government set up the Commission on the Status of Women that then listed a number of reforms that were needed for women's rights. And that was very much as a precursor to joining the EU. And it was also actually the start of the National Women's Council, because it's where women's organisations came together to lobby and campaign for those changes for women's rights. So it was a real pivotal moment in terms of women's rights and joining the EU. And that has followed through, you know, in so many areas. And Laura and Mirren, you know, have been talking about the sort of the pay and the employment areas. Similarly, on violence against women, I mean, yeah. In fact, this week, Ireland is going to be launching a new strategy on violence against women. And that's coming from what's the Istanbul Convention from the Council of Europe. And also, I mean, in terms of childcare being a really core issue, and the EU leading that in terms of the targets that was established, they call the Barcelona targets, for the type of spending, the type of provision that needed to happen in childcare. So, you know, Ireland has really been pushed in a way by many, many directives, by policies within the EU on women's rights.
Yeah. Laura, if you look at what I mentioned to Mirren as well about politics and the involvement of women, and she mentioned what Ursula von der Leyen has said about needing 50% of women involved in the management of things. In the political sphere, we're going through changes ourselves. The next general election will have to have 40% female candidates. Now, there's an argument that, you know, that would have happened by a natural way, or do you need a quota, or should that be imposed? Is that the area where you're talking about, well, look, you know, you have to push things on, you have to stimulate debate, you have to raise these issues to make changes, to change the way politics works, to allow women be involved? Otherwise, if you leave it to countries individually, it kind of never gets done, or done in a very delayed way.
Yeah, look, all the evidence would show that Ireland has been a foot dragger in all of the rights that we've got through the EU, and there's no reason to believe that we'd be any different about setting national quotas to have women present in our highest office. So even if we look back to the Equal Pay Act back in 1977, we sent our then Minister for Foreign Affairs over over to ask for a derogation to delay implementation of equal pay.
Yeah.
So right through, I mean, our act looking at flexible working. The EU timeline is August this year. We got 4 years to do it, and we're rushing it through before the Dáil.
Yeah.
But just one important thing: we talk about the marriage bar, and people know, but we're still having women living with the impact today.
Yeah,
because many
pensions.
Of your listeners would have had their PRSI contributions closed at the time of the marriage bar, and they're getting no or a very low pension because of that. So it's a lived experience for many listeners today.
Okay, final point, Orla, briefly. Look, the argument is if you can't see it, you can't be it. Is it important to have people like Ursula von der Leyen as head of the EU commissioners as well as females, so people can think about that might be a career for me down the line?
Absolutely. We know from all our work with young women that we need to have women in key leadership roles, and that's in every sector of society. And it's, you know, it's one of the reasons why the National Women's Council has campaigned really strongly for quotas.
Yeah.
Quotas in politics, but also quotas for boards, because we have a really poor record in Ireland. And when you look at any European table in terms of leadership, Ireland actually fall really low on those tables in terms
so
of women's
more
representation.
More work to be done
and
in that area.
You know, senior management level as well. So that's why we need things like quotas.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, Laura and Orla, thanks so much for talking to us in the programme about that this morning. That's Dr. Laura Bamblick, Head of Social Policy and Employment Affairs, Irish Congress Trade Unions, Orla O'Connor, Director of the National Women's Council of Ireland. If you have a view on that, get in touch. Get involved in the survey online, radiokerry.ie/EU and me. Check out our social media. We'll give you links. We've given links to that as well. Your thoughts on our role in the EU and its work for us over the last 50 years.